There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for a coolest conversations throwback, presented by Hard Rock here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks for listening. And please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My conversation with Jesse Malin first aired in March of 2015 around the release of his album New York Before the War. We talk about that, as well as his days in Degeneration and their reforming, and we speak also about his first band, Heart Attack. He was in that from the ages of 12 to 16. Our coolest song in the world at the time was Turn Up the Mains, off of New York Before the War. So let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Jesse for your coolest conversations throwback presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
You got the Mighty Manfred here, and it is time for your coolest conversations. Joining me today is Jesse Malin. Got him on the line here. How are you, Jesse?
I'm doing great, Manfred. Doing really good.
Hey, man, look, a brand new album is on the way out. We just listened to a track off of it, Turn Up the Mains. The album's called New York Before the War. Is that your seventh? Is that your seventh solo album?
I think so, yeah. I think that is it, actually. Including a covers record I did in 2008 called On Your Sleeve, and that would be the seventh, yeah.
Well, New York Before the War, what war are you talking about?
Not one particular war. It's like a metaphor for surviving. All the things that, you know, you're getting hit with every day. I mean, I come from New York, but, you know, we travel all over the world. People might relate to a city that, you know, I don't know, certain places in the world that influence people or people come to create and do things. But as changes happen and the whole, you know, immediate, like, disposable digital age where things just go in and out and people are on to the next thing, I think a lot of stuff gets washed away. And it's about trying to hold on to those things and find your place and keep that going. So I was writing the record living in this crooked, weird building on Avenue C in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And I looked out the window after I was writing the record, and I went out to the store and came back, and I kept looking at the side of the building. It just said, "The War," painted in these big graffiti letters. Some kid must have hung upside down off the roof. And I wrote that in my notebook, and I was looking for a title for everything I just said to you about, you know, the meaning of it, and that just kind of struck me. It seemed to make sense. So that's where it came from. Not one particular war. I'm a pacifist.
Well, I like the idea that you've, you jotted that down in the notebook. How many out of the songs on the album, I mean, how many ideas are coming out of that notebook?
I always carry a notebook when I'm out, like in writing mode. You know, I'm scribbling down ideas, things I hear people say, things, a line in a movie, anything like that. But I have a bunch of those old school, you know, school actually composition notebooks. And when I'm stuck for, you know, maybe a title or a line in a song, or there might be the whole song in there, I go to the notebooks. At the same time, I'm working on the music and singing stuff in a free form kind of subconscious style, just spitting out stuff. And at one point, the notebooks meet the recordings of the music, and together I find out where the song is and what I'm trying to say. So, the notebooks are helpful, especially when I'm in a jam. I go back there and I say, oh, yeah, I wrote this down. This is perfect for this.
Well, Turn Up the Mains, that's the coolest song of the week this week, and we just listened to that prior to us talking. So any elements of that out of The Notebook, or what's that song about?
That one kind of just came out pretty fast in a dressing room in Spain. We were on tour for the Light of Day Parkinson's relief tour, and we were in Spain waiting to go on. I think Willie Nile and some other cats were there, and we were just kind of revving up guitar stuff. And it came from listening to a lot of the music of the MC5. Recently had become friendly with Wayne Kramer, and listening to that Raw Power period of the Stooges, and probably a little Stones, Give Me Shelter. Somehow all that was in my mind from my crazy iPod shuffle, and I just started to bang that one out. It kind of came pretty immediately. It's just like a song of frustration and trying to transcend all the things that we're hit with on a daily basis, from job, relationships, just trying to find ways to keep a smile and when you're just getting disgusted with everything. I mean, it's pretty much like a fuck you song, and I think there's always a need for that, I think, with music, especially rock and roll, to have something that's just like, let's just turn it up, like that Bob Marley thing, when the music hits, you feel no pain. And that's always been my medicine, my place to go is when things are tough. I went to my records or went to my guitar, and getting on stage is like an exorcism. So I guess the other thing would be coming from a sound check, a sound guy would always say, turn up the mains, checking the system in a club, like the monitors and then the mains, being the main speakers hanging, the main amps, turn up those main amps, turn up the mains. Kick out the jam.
Well, I'm right there with you on all that. So when I was looking at the personnel on the for that particular track, I thought I saw Alejandro Escovedo's name on there as contributing backing vocals. Is that the Austin, Texas guy, the True Believers guy?
Yeah, Alejandro's a really super talented guy. I'm a big fan. We've done some touring together. I met him actually at the Paradiso many years ago in Amsterdam. We both weren't smoking anything. We were just playing our guitars. But he was always very sweet and supportive. And I've done some stuff with him on the road in America. And at South by Southwest, he does a lot of the closing nights. And he's just a guy that's such a history and such a real soul and rock and roll heart. He was in New York, and he was doing some stuff from one of his tours. And I was in the studio at the same time. And usually we'll go get a vegetarian lunch at somewhere in the East Village, and this time being as time for that, I said, I'm in the studio, but come by and, come and sing on something. And just knowing his love of like old style 70s dirty rock and roll, I wanted to have him on this track, and he came down and banged away on it with us, screamed it out.
Well, very cool. So let me ask you this. Before you embarked on the solo career, you were in D-Generation. Tell me what the pluses and minuses to you are about, being a solo artist, let's say, or considered to be a solo artist, as opposed to being in a band or having a band identity.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing about being in a band with all the people you grew up with or your friends, or having this five-headed monster. I just believe in bands as gangs, my favorite groups, The Clash, Ramones, and just like your friends running down the street making trouble. And there's nothing like that. I always love that feeling looking at it as a band. But it's also like a five-way marriage, and you love these people and you can hate these people, and it can be very intense, and after a while it can explode. So, that's the downside, is there's, as a writer and as a person, when you think of yourself as an artist or whatever, you want to move forward and act and do stuff and not have to be like, let's take a boat or let's. So being a solo artist, you can make those decisions, move fast, show up with an acoustic guitar, put anybody you want on the record, not offend anybody, and say what you want. When I was writing for D-Generation, I was writing for four other people, knowing that what I was singing would represent them. And then as a solo artist, I could get more personal and deeper and just write whatever I felt, or examine myself, spit out my whole couch up there or whatever. And it was something really liberating about that, having a total personal outlet for whatever I wanted to say. And in D-Generation, we tour with bands like Offspring and Green Day and, L7. And it was more about the mosh pit for as an opener or any shows, even our crowd. They wanted it fast and loud. They didn't care what we were singing about. So when I stripped it down a little for my solo career, and people actually listened to the lyrics, it meant something to me, because lyrics always meant something to me, even in D-Generation, just sometimes got lost in the brothel creepers and the hairspray.
Oh, I hear you. In fact, I sympathize a lot with that. I mean, it's especially just doing live shows. I mean, as a singer in a band, and you know, if you got the other elements, especially the guitar or the PA is underpowered, and nobody knows what the hell you're singing, they can't even hear it. You know, they want you there, though. They want the singer doing something, but it's not. You know, it doesn't. It's really harder to make that connection unless you can either get the PA right, which is in a lot of clubs, and it's not going to happen, or, as you say, you know, get things more stripped down and then allow people to focus on that. So,
And I like doing both. I still do shows with D-Generation. We have a record coming out in April for Record Store Day, our first in a gazillion years, a 10-inch single, and we're going to Spain to do
something.
Well,
wait, Jesse, let me ask you about that. So you guys had split up about, like, around the end of the 90s, 99, let's say, and then you got together couple years back, did some reunion shows. Why what was the impetus to make another record? Why did you do that?
The shows were so much fun, and the fans were, you know, so supportive of it, you know, wanting to hear new music, and we kept getting asked to do other things, festivals and stuff, and so, well, the only way we're going to be able to continue to do this, it's not like we had huge hits or something, or go out there and be, you know, the Four Seasons, it would be to make, you know, a new record and see what that'd be like. And so we got together in this basement downtown and blasted out a lot of stuff over, I guess, a long period, because, you know, some of the tensions would rise up again. So I'd be busy with my solo career. Cali Pyro is a DJ and is part of California and travels around the world. Everybody was doing different things. And so the record's pretty close to being finished, but it just seemed like that would be the next step. Like, we just started writing songs, and we felt like we had something to say about, you know, the current state of the world. And you know, we were still not thrilled with it. So it was a place to go. And that'll be the first the way we're back in is just with a 10-inch release to support Record Store Day, just two songs, and then it'll come out the full record to follow in the fall.
Oh, well, that's great. In fact, I like to hear that Howie's going to be back playing bass. I've seen him DJ out here a bunch, and he's pretty great. So,
yeah.
So you were in D-Generation for a long time, but I was just finding out that prior to that, and you have to tell me if this is right, you were in a punk band called Heart Attack, and you started in that band when you were like 12. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Heart Attack started when I was 12 to 16. It ran. We did three singles, three EPs, and you know, part of the hardcore scene in New York, probably the first hardcore record to come out of the New York scene anyway. God is Dead, when I was 14. And we toured a lot. We went out to the West Coast with bands like GBH, Dead Kennedys, Bad Brains. And it was a great time in my life. You know, I was...
Wait. I got to ask you. I mean, so number one, how young were you when you sold your soul to the devil or the devil's music? And number two, were your parents like dropping you off at gigs or something? Or how in the world were you able to pursue that like at 14 or 12?
You get on the subway with your guitar and a box full of pedals and cables, and you showed up at A7 or 171A or these clubs, and there was gear there, or you wrangled somebody's parents to throw all the Japanese crappy amps in the back of a car and pull up in front of CBGBs, and get an ad from a supermarket with some guy that has a van and tell him it's a matinee and it'll be over quick and he'd drive you in. But, you know, whatever you do, my mom was always supportive because I never got into drugs. You know, a lot of things about hardcore punk was like, we're going to be in your face. We're going to have something to say. It's going to be louder and crazier than anything you heard. And we're going to be sober. You know, we're not going to, and not everybody, but there was a lot of information out there that we didn't want to burn out and become like what had happened to, you know, that 70s Johnny Thunders, Sid Vicious scene, or the hippies. Like, it's like, we're going to be present, we're going to be messed in your face, but we're going to be clean. And I think that my mom knew that the music was my drive and that she couldn't hold me back, so she was really supportive. And some kids' families got it, some couldn't join us after a couple times. They had to stay back in Queens and, you know, go back to school. But it was always music for me.
Well, wow, man, I gotta say, that's incredible. So for the new album, you've got a couple of in-stores happening right around the time the album comes out. The album's out, I think, March the 31st. You have some in-stores coming up before that. Do you want to go ahead and tell us where those in-stores are at?
Yeah, I want to sign the record, the vinyl, the CDs, and play some songs on a guitar. We'll be at Jack's Music. It's a classic store, you might know it, in Red Bank, New Jersey, the 29th, Sunday. I think it's sometime around 3 in the afternoon, the 29th of March. And on the actual release day of New York Before the War, we'll be in Pennsylvania, just outside of Philly at Main Street Music on the 31st. I think it's at 7 o'clock. I'll be signing, and we'll be playing some songs live from the record. And then
we'll hearing about thinking about songs off the record. Let's listen to another song off the album. Let's listen to Death Star. And to me, that's got some Duane Eddy elements in there, Lou Reed elements in there. Tell us what's Death Star about.
Death Star really fits in a lot with the title of New York Before the War. It's about how, you know, technology and everything is so advanced. We got computers and gadgets and phones, and how a lot of people are still really disconnected as much as we're supposedly so, you know, able to move information this fast. And how, like I said earlier, disposable so much of the art is and so much of the information. It just goes by so fast that has not a lot of, you know, anything that has any gravity to retain, and it's about stepping back and trying to be in the moment. You know, it's a statement of our times, 2015, you know, now, and realizing you're alive right now. So, you know, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to be there and feel it, do something, or are you just going to take a picture and tell somebody you were there?
Well, we're going to feel in just a second. First, though, Jesse, thanks so much for speaking with me today as part of our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, cool. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Another song off of New York Before the War. Album's out March the 31st. Here's Death Star from Jesse Malin and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Kissing cousins always said I was for fun. It was a joke when we all wore pajamas in the sun. Hallelujah, Speedo.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.